Hello there, everyone. Happy Friday. Welcome back to another Risk Adjustment Roundtable group. I hope everyone's had a great month. Looking forward to today's conversation. It's Kristen Rodriguez, your usual moderator, back with the group. Excited to be here. And before we kick off into the discussion, just a couple quick housekeeping items for everybody. Friendly reminder that we do not mute anyone's line during these calls. We do that to make it even easier for you just to speak up and engage in the conversation. But with that comes a little bit of responsibility. I just want to be sure that when you're not actively engaging in the conversation, that you are pretty mindful of your mute button the good old-fashioned way. That way we keep the line clear of any background noises or conversations going on, especially if you're all in a conference room together, kind of huddled around the same phone. And then also another important reminder about phone etiquette. I want to be sure that you don't place us on hold. If you do need to step away from your desk, please just simply keep the line on mute. Nobody will be the wiser. If you place us on hold, then your hold music comes out loud and clear across the phone, which is pretty disruptive. And then finally, one other etiquette item to note, especially as we are starting to welcome a lot of newcomers to our roundtable calls, which is wonderful. Our cohort is steadily growing. I just want to remind folks that our roundtable calls are open discussions, and they're really designed to support folks who spend all day focused on risk adjustment and risk adjustment coding challenges. And we want to approach that in a spirit of collaboration and a spirit of helpfulness. And just be sure that we're all trying to be mindful and give everyone a chance to contribute in a kind of supportive environment. So with that, I'm going to open it up. If folks have comments or questions or topics that they'd like to cover on today's call. Well, Jess DePont, how was your vacation? Since I don't have anybody speaking up yet.
My vacation was fantastic. Thank you, Kristen.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it.
I have an innocuous question. Maybe it's a softball, so maybe people will pipe up and then feel comfortable asking any other burning questions they have. So I know I've asked this question of many of the folks on the phone before, but as we look towards building metrics and measurements around some of our risk adjustment activities, namely our retrospective chart reviews, I was wondering if anybody measures what I call a find rate, or, you know, the percentage of time when you're doing chart reviews, your coders actually find an ad that they can add to the member's record with risk adjustment value. So if anybody tracks that information, I'd be curious how you track it. And if you are tracking it and you know the number off the top of your head, I would love to know sort of ballpark what your find rate is.
Jeff, we track that. I'm going to let our analysts, this is Deb at Paramount. I'm going to let Kevin, one of our analysts, talk on it because we have our coders complete what we call a productivity log. And then they added, they add the codes that they add, and then we analysts put in the weights of the codes, and they come up with a methodology to actually equate the effectiveness. We don't call it a find rate, but because it's adds and deletes, don't you know, because it isn't just adds. So it's the effectiveness of the chart review is kind of how we call it. So go ahead, Kev.
I mean, that's what we did. Although, I mean, we're not doing it now. I know that's what we did. We did it last year. And the reason we were doing it, we were trying to get – basically, we were trying to look at the effectiveness of the list that Paul Tate puts out.
Yeah.
I know Paul Tate puts out, like, their kind of national expectations, and we were just trying to see how effective it was. So basically mapping our percentages to their percentages.
And did you say it was 10%?
I think we were at like 8 or 9%. So, okay. I mean, I wouldn't say it was like something formal, but it was something we were looking at the time. So I don't know if that helps you.
No, it absolutely does. And that actually, so we measure it a little bit differently, but
we're sort of around that same number. We're trending at about 8%. We do it a little differently at Health New England because we made the decision a few years ago to separate out sort of chart reviews with the intent of finding ads, and then audits where we're looking for delete suspects. Certainly, if throughout the course of a chart review, our coders come across something that potentially needs to be retracted, they, you know, will inform our coding auditor that there's a potential retraction, but we track that a little separately. But we're sort of in that 8% range. So it's good to hear that you guys are, while measuring it differently, are kind of in that same percentage, because we're hearing that maybe we're low and that we should be up over 10%, even closer to 15%. And it's just making me question, you know, we've done some work to not be quite as conservative as we've been in the past, but it seems like we're still on the lower end of the spectrum. Anybody else out there measuring find rate?
Hi, this is Karen from Quartz. When we do our audits, we put them into a database, and then we get monthly and quarterly stats as to how many chart reviews done, and then we have our adds and deletes. And we're just kind of figuring out in our head, and it seems like we're about 8% also, based on what I can remember of my last quarterly stats. So we don't actually use a metric as a percentage. We just give the actual total numbers.
Gotcha. Thank you. That's helpful.
Yep.
Hey, Jess. This is Deb again.
Yes.
We just want to clarify something because that was kind of interesting how you said you separated the chart audits for focus on ads, and then you have an auditor that focuses on deletes. And we had muted you for a second, so we were talking amongst ourselves. But so we currently, all of our coders look for ads or deletes, but our auditor, she will then review all the deletes. Do you work on the same list, or do you have two separate lists like a delete project?
We have a delete project. So our coders will raise up deletes, and our auditor reviews all of the deletes that they're recommending, and she will then enter them in the system if she agrees with them. But then she is focused on, we'll run, after we do our chase list, we'll run a delete suspect project out of the system to identify potential suspects, right? So one cancer code with no other corresponding visits or services in a plan year, you know, that's going to pop up on our delete suspect list. And then she will, depending on how many records are on that, she'll either go through that by herself or we'll enlist some help of the other coders to get through that project.
Thank you. That clarifies it for us. Appreciate
okay.
that.
No problem.
Hey, this is Jason. Hello, all.
Hi.
Hi,
Jason.
Hey, what's that?
I just said hi, Jason. The way you sounded, it said, hi, I'm Jason, long-time
first
listener.
First-time caller.
Yeah.
First-time caller, long-time listener. Anyway, so on your find rate, Jess, do you guys or Deb or whoever else and Karen, Deb was on the call yesterday, but we missed Jess and Karen on the call yesterday. But that's okay. On your find rate, do you do that calculation at the member level or by records, or how do you calculate that find rate?
That's a great question. The way we count, and if my coders are on the phone, which I suspect maybe a few of them are, I believe we have come to the agreement that each chart member combination is sort of counted as a unique record. So it's the number of members with a record where we found an additive code, if that makes sense. So even if there was like multiple records for a single member over different physicians, I think we would count those separately. Does that make sense?
Yes. And then what do you guys use this rate? I mean, what does this rate show you, or how do you use this of value?
For the time being, the way I use it primarily is when I'm projecting out my improvements for my bid memo. So I say, you know, last year we found stuff, we did 3,300 chart reviews, we found additive codes with value 8% of the time. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z improvements over the next year, and I think I'm going to be able to increase my find rate and get through more charts, meaning we're going to find more things. And during this last bid process, I used the find rate as a component to actually come up with an average improvement value, PMPM, that I then was able to roll forward and project out, you know, based on the numbers that I'm projecting. I think I can improve our overall revenue and score by X amount for payment year 2018 and beyond.
And Jason, this is Deb. We very similarly to what Jeff does, but we just do it. Our find rate is based on HCC per member. So if we find multiple HCCs on one member, we take that into account because that has an impact on our bottom line, our revenue. And so we report to, in the finance world, and so our VP likes to see that. But also, in addition to the bid and how many coders that we're going to need, we also do an ROI against our vendors. So we have a couple of prospective programs that we're doing. And then my VP had ventured, hey, should we outsource certain outlying counties to do coding, you know, what? So we did an ROI project to look at the effectiveness of our internal coding versus kind of somewhat of the outside vendors, and it which was really good to show them that they're doing better than our vendors, which is what I had suspected, but it was good to have the proof when you're taking it to your C-suite.
Hi, this is Taryn, and we do ours a little bit differently. So we actually, for chart reviews, we count per member. So we're looking at all of their medical records for the entire calendar year, and we don't count how many of those records that we review. We just, so we count that member as individual as one. And then we track the HCCs, our adds and deletes, as Deb does, as just the HCC. It doesn't matter how many times it's on a multiple record that we have to delete it. And then what we use our stats for is actually this year we're kind of trying to show the leadership how little audits we're able to get done so that we can try to add staff to our department and to show that previous years how many more we were able to do and what the financial impact was. So now that we're having so many government audits and we're such a limited staff here, now we're trying to show that we can't get to the auditing piece. So that's how we're trying to use it right now.
Well, thank you all so much. This is incredibly helpful. And certainly as I go forward or if I find anything different on my sort of quest to understand how people are measuring and what the industry averages are around sort of this idea of what percentage of the time we're finding, I will share that with the group. But thank you.
Great. Thanks, everybody. Go ahead, Deb. Was that Deb?
What?
Was that you? Did you have something else you wanted to?
But we were going to bring up a new topic. Kelly's over here smiling at me.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Do it. Hey, anybody been on the IBA phone calls lately? And the big topic of conversation is the accepted medical records. And are you having a debate with your current auditor as to will they or won't they accept them?
Hi, Deb. This is Karen from Courts. I know you and I kind of went back and forth on an email this week. It sounds like our IVAs almost were the same, but we're two different IVAs, how they're actually sending emails to CMS trying to question and get clarification before they change their processes.
I know. Did you happen to get a clarification, Karen? Because I know we haven't chatted in a couple of days.
Yeah, no, I have not got. I've not heard anything more from my IVA at all on that. So I think they're still waiting for clarification. How about you?
Yeah, us too. And I don't understand what the clarification is. CMS said it. Oh, you know what the interpretation, Kelly, was? They said maybe. They're interpreting the maybe as maybe with no space in between the may and the be. And we're like, no, that says we may do this, not maybe. I don't understand why you're trying to
could be,
should be, wanna be. I don't know. They're just not. They're questioning CMS because they don't want to change their processes. That's what they've told us. They said their system, because they all changed their system for the way it was last year to kind of be more automated. Now, if they have to change it again, they have to redo their entire system. And I'm like, I'm sorry, that's not my fault. If CMS says you have to accept this record, you have to accept this record. However you decide to accept it within your own system, that's not my fault. And I don't mean to sound so mean about that, but that's a CMS rule.
Yeah, this is Jason. I find it interesting. We kind of had a call about this yesterday, talking about IVAs, and maybe I don't understand or have a different perspective, but I look at the bottom line is I've contracted with an IVA. You will do it how I tell you to do it or how CMS tells you to do it, and that's the end of it.
Okay, Jason, I just kind of stood and clapped for you.
And we've already – so let me give you an example. Last year, when we did the 2015, because of such a short timeline of getting records and everything, we just had our IVA do the review, and then I just said, okay, yep, it's all right, go ahead and submit it. But this year, what I have done is because it's actually the issuer has to sign off on that IVA to submit packages 1 and 2 to CMS. So we have to agree with what they're saying. So this year, what I've done is I've actually taken one of my coders who has actually done the review that our IVA is going to do. So when they come back, when they say, okay, go ahead, here are our results, go ahead and submit this, I'm actually going to have my coder be able to go through that and to say, yeah, I agree with that, or no, I don't, and this is what we found, because I just feel at the end of the day, it's the issuer who gets to make that final decision. It's the issuer who is audited. It's the issuer who's going to have take back or whatever. Not the IVA. And so, anyways, that's kind of my perspective of it, and we've approached it that way with our IVA that basically says, okay, I understand these are your guidelines or whatever, but at the end of the day, we're being audited. So you're going to do it our way. And that's part of when we vetted our different IVAs, we were very clear on that with them.
That's a good point, Jason, because we're currently arguing, and I think when we have our next meeting, I think I'm just going to point blank say no more arguing, we're done, because with inpatient medical records, they have this new process they're doing this year called intake, where before they even review the medical record, they're looking to see for completeness of what we've sent them, and one of them is when it's inpatient or an institutional, they're looking to see if they have the history and physical, discharge summary, and the progress note for that inpatient stay. And I'm like, that's not necessary. If the discharge summary from that inpatient stay supports the HCC being audited, all you need is the discharge summary. I don't have to provide you. It's the difference between coding for a claim versus coding for review. And if you're trying to validate an HCC and the discharge summary supports it, then you have to accept it. And they're like, well, we'll take that back and let you know. And I'm like, no, it will support it.
Yeah, we've been very happy with our IVA. We have our same IVA that we had last year. We have biweekly meetings with them. They're very accommodating. So I'm not going to share on the phone, but if anyone wants to know our IVA is, and they have done MA and ACA for a long time, so they're not new to this space. They understand how this works. And like I said, we vetted a lot of different IDAs. And we had some that we were interested in, but as we went through kind of an RFP process, we just didn't feel like that they were going to listen to us, as much as I felt and our leadership felt that they should. So, but yeah, we've been happy with our IBA.
Thank you, Jason. Look for an email from me.
Okay.
Are we going to want to do another IVA auditor survey like we did earlier this calendar year?
Yes, please.
So what's the right timing for that?
I think that runs through January with this current IVA process. So I don't know if you want to wait till after it's all done or if you want to do it midway. And then again, when it's all done, I don't know. But with the current IVA process runs through January of 2018.
Deb, this is Jeff. Can I ask a question? When did you sign your contract with your current IVA?
We kept our same one from last year, and we signed our contract extension like in April. I'll have to get the exact date for you. We did it in April. And what happened after we signed the extension is they changed our contact person, and then they implemented all these new rules. And I'm like, oh, this is different from last year, which was not part of the contract. But it's the overall general IVA process, not specifics that would have been in the contract is what they told me.
Gotcha. So I think if we waited until after everybody was done so that we could get full feedback, Kristen, like maybe if we did it end of January, beginning of February, it sounds like that would still give folks, if they wanted to use the results to inform going through an RFP process, some time to take that in and use it prior to having to sign with an IVA for the next go-around.
Agreed.
Okay, so that was about the time we did last year, and Karen and Don really led that charge last year, so what I'll do is I'll take that discussion offline. I think there's a couple of our risk adjustment cohort leaders that we have a call later on in this quarter, so we can make sure that we have it, have folks have their eyes on the survey if there's any additional questions we want to add to it, building on what Karen and Don worked so hard on last year and all that good stuff. But that sounds great. And then the only other note, just because now I'm thinking about it, tentatively – not written in stone, because the committee responsible for reviewing the 2018 calendar has not yet approved it. So I'm going to underscore the word tentatively. I think our risk adjustment value visit next year will be May 16th through 18th in Columbus, Ohio.
Go Buckeyes!
Oh, wait.
Oh. So I'll be talking about Carmel, Paramount, and SumaCare about co-hosting that event a little later. Okay, great. Sorry, back to you guys. That was a little bit of a housekeeping break. Sorry about that. Put myself back on mute. More questions.
Hey, Kristen, so with that, are you looking for more of IVA discussion during that in May? I know that's a little late in the process. We didn't sign we kept our same IVA, but we didn't sign our statement of work, I don't think, until May or early June.
That's a great question, Jason. And the beautiful answer that I have is that's really up to you guys. And you're not being flippant at all. That was actually, last year we did the risk adjustment value visit in February. And so we had a session, again, kudos to Karen and Don because they led it, where we actually did talk about that survey. And ultimately, you'll remember, we decided to do like a second round on that survey, which we then covered in a later webinar. So because the value visit is likely moving to May per this group's request, it seemed to me that the survey probably needs to be separated, that maybe we would do the survey, you know, it sounds like January, February, and we would do that on a virtual environment, and then the value visit would be on different topics. But, you know, ultimately it's up to this group how you guys want to use your time together. So I'm very open to whatever it makes the most sense.
So going along with the IBA discussion, I'm curious if anyone has done any analysis, and we probably don't have, what's his name? Darren? Who is the actuary guy? Dean. Sorry, just thinking out loud. I'm curious, because we've talked a lot about that we don't feel, here at Select Health, we don't feel that the financial impact is going to be as great on the ACA side as it will be on the MA side. And why we, and I guess that kind of also depends on your membership, as it's your total, you know, your total risk score. But we've done some analysis of doing deletes and running them through the model to kind of see how it changes their risk scores, and we don't see a lot of impact with that. So I'm just wondering if any other health plans have done any analysis of that, if they agree or disagree with that, or don't
Jason,
really know.
Are you asking the deletes in ACA you think have less impact than the deletes in Medicare?
So
I just want to make sure I understand the question.
So I'm looking at it as it, if I understand correctly, so when you do a RADV with an MA, if they find errors, they're looking at that at the member level, and we know that every HCC that's submitted, you know, you get reimbursement for that.
Yeah.
But on the ACA side, it's not so much the individual HCCs as it is kind of the total of your population risk score versus the other ones in your market versus the premiums.
Versus
so,
the rating area versus
yeah.
everything else.
And what we've looked at as, you know, is we've looked at doing our supplemental and different things is like, oh, we have deletes, and we look at it, and it changes the risk score a little bit. You know, it changes on the metal level, but not dramatically different, not at the same level as it is on the MA side.
We did not find that in our market area for ACA. As a matter of fact, I had one of my coders come in and say, stop having me look at these because I'm doing way too many deletes. So we actually went back to our analyst and said, okay, you're not going to like this because we're finding way too many deletes. Give us another target list. And then the next month, Brian came to us and said, what did you do? And we're like, we told you. There was a huge impact for us on ACA World for deletes. So
With your overall risk scores?
Yes.
And how big is your membership?
Three.
For ACA?
Well,
just everything.
Because it was small group that you were doing. It affected the small group. So in small group, I think it's like 8,000 for both HICS and small group.
Hello.
8 to 10, something like that, Jason.
Thank
what
you.
About on individual?
Our MA population is like 16. We have more in our MA population, and we have less in our ACA.
Oh, whose phone is on hold? Maybe they took it off. What was that, Deb?
Because the little girl didn't contact me.
Hold on 1 second, Jason. I'm almost there. Hold on, Deb. I accidentally muted you. All right. Deb and Jason, you guys should be back on.
I don't think that was English.
I don't think that was English. But, okay, so
that was in a clear plan, taking a side call. No big deal. We got it.
I love it. Okay, so our ACA population is between 8 and 10,000, and where we noticed the impact was in our small group ACA, which I think is 4. I want to say it's like 4,000-ish, and our Medicare population is like at 16.5. So, I mean, we just have a larger population, So, like, a few deletes in a large population is not going to have the same impact in a smaller population.
How much of the market share, Deb, do you guys have in your market?
I don't know.
We don't know.
Are you talking statewide?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not much. Yeah. So we're really kind of at the mercy of the state denominator. You know, I don't know what yours is, but.
We have a lot of the market.
Oh,
so I wonder if that's
so
part of it.
So that makes sense. So, if you drop significantly, hypothetically, then the state denominator is going to drop too.
Yep.
Where we're totally at the mercy of the state.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense then. So with that, Deb, have you guys kind of pulled back on doing deletes then?
No. We're all about accurate coding, Jason. I would never admit that we pull back from deletes. We just want to make sure that we're strategically looking at the accurate list of members that need to be reviewed, and we're looking for accurate coding in case CMS is listening.
Okay, got it. Yeah, great answer.
Yeah, this is Kristen, and in your free time, I want you to Google on YouTube Best Little Whorehouse in Texas and the song I Like to Dance a Little Sidestep, and I would like you to listen to that song for me.
Okay, will do, Kristen. You might get a little yee-haw out of me, too.
So I've got a lot of ACA questions. Anybody have any idea when you expect the 2015 results?
Hey, you know that YouTube video that Kristen just referred me to? Yeah, ask that same question to CMS and have them look up that song.
I know their famous response is coming soon.
That's okay. I'm still waiting for a response from a contract year 2011 RADV.
All right, so let's open it up for a quick second. Give Jason a chance to drink some water. Any others in the line that haven't had a chance yet to ask a question or wanted to put anything forward for the group for discussion?
This is Randy Stein from Neighborhood Health Plan in Rhode Island. I just wanted to ask kind of an etiquette question. I've noticed people have been careful not to mention the various vendors and IVAs that you're all using. Is that a rule of the conversation that you don't bring them up? I just want to understand how this group works.
Oh, Randy, that's such a great question. Thank you for asking it. This is Kristen again with the Alliance. So so the short answer is it's really at every member's discretion to what extent they want to discuss specific vendors that they use. So everything from simply naming the vendor to giving recommendations or voicing concerns. So that's absolutely up to everyone's discretion. And many people do, like Jason did a little bit earlier, prefer to do that like more in one-on-one conversations just for comfort levels. And so what I would say is that in general, if you're curious about specific vendors and you don't and you're not able to get a response from a group setting, then feel free to reach out to me individually, and I can connect you with some folks that you could reach out to more, you know, one-on-one. And usually, you know, we know usually who uses what vendors, and so we can kind of, you know, give you that sense. So this is a great resource for vendor recommendations and ideas for RFPs and things like that, but it definitely depends on, you know, what type of vendor relationship and to what extent it's sensitive. The one rule that the Alliance does have is we do not – solicit nor encourage folks to share contractual details. up to and including service level agreements and pricing and things like that. So if that's something
right.
that people do offline, then that's completely up to them, but we don't facilitate that sharing just from a safe harbor perspective.
Good. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, great question. Any others in the line that want to ask questions of the group, or if there's others that this is, you know, one of your first call-ins to this group? I know we have folks, you know, I'm sure you're hearing, you know, Jason and Deb and Jessica and Karen have been here since the beginning and so very comfortable participating. But if anyone else is, you know, a little bit new and wants to get, we could even go around the room and kind of virtually introduce ourselves, so to speak, whatever's helpful, right? Because this isn't meant to be quote-unquote, like an old boys club or anything like that, right? It's very open, and I want to make sure that folks are feeling comfortable and have a sense of who they're actually talking with on the line. And the last note just on that piece of it is we do publish the attendee list for members, so it's not publicly available, but for members who are logged into the website, you're able to see who's on the line, which plans registered, and also everyone's individual contact information is also available. So if, for example, someone does, you know, make a comment and you want to follow up with them, it's really easy to go and grab their name and email them independently. So just want to be sure everyone's aware of the level of transparency. We do try to make these calls very transparent. We record them. We have that attendee list out there. And then, of course, I'm always available to assist you in contacting people or if anybody has concerns or questions about how the call is formatted. Up to now, this group has voiced that they like just having this open format, and so we haven't really formalized an agenda, but we always are willing to take suggestions for topic areas of focus. If we want to have a theme for a Friday call, we can absolutely do that too. So, again, just wanting to be sure that for folks who are maybe newer to this group and are still trying to get a feel for it, that you know that, you know, suggestions are always welcome. This is 100% a co-creation model, and we want you guys to have that ownership.
Hi, Kristen. This is Colleen at Quartz, and I have a question. A couple weeks ago on the RADV call on Wednesday, and I'm not sure who brought it up, but they were questioning the procedure codes that are on the MCE report that validate as appropriate code used to capture an HCC, but then there's no notes to support it, like it's a registered dietitian or it's infusion-type therapy charges. And it might be where the member was on another plan previously, now they're on our plan, and we don't have those notes to support it. So I'm just wondering what others thought about how or what you would use to support the HCC that's being captured after the registered dietitian or like the infusion therapy when they're outpatient services.
That was the one we were talking about earlier, Colleen, where
okay.
They said the acceptable medical record.
Right.
As it was later in the date. So, like, if data service is February and they weren't with you, but they were with you in April and still refusing and still
right.
either getting those infusion services or had seen their physician for the same .HCC that was for the infusion services, that you could submit that later medical record.
So do you think, though, like with the registered dietitian procedure codes, that those should be accessible for risk adjustment when they're not a face-to-face visit with the physician?
No.
Okay.
I don't think it should be, but we have been we found out that a lot of those acceptable medical records are because of the CPT code driving it.
Right. Right. I've seen that as well, and I was just curious to see if others were finding the same thing.
So it sounds to me, too, like CMS is going to start, and I know they've said it, like Kelly said, we're not a RADV, but
right.
It looks like they're getting back to the MA-RADV rules, where if it was reported once in the year, you can use that that support for the HCC. That's how we kind of sort of interpreted the last one where they said acceptable medical records.
But I think it's still at the same time, didn't it say it still has to link to a claim?
Correct. It has to link to a
right.
claim. Correct. But in your example, let's say that they're receiving infusion services and getting that through either an RN or a registered dietitian or whatever they're doing, and then they do have to go to their follow-up for their physician, and that claim went through EDGE. I would, and that medical record for that physician actually supported the HCC for the infusion data service, I would submit that medical record linked to that claim in support of that HCC.
Okay.
Do you understand what I just said?
Yeah, I'm trying to think through it in my head here as it's going through or whatever, because I'm just thinking, I know I had a member where they were on another plan and they're having their registered dietitian services now. So I don't have the medical record from the physician because it was prior to where they ordered it. Now they're just doing their follow-up with the registered dietitian, then they're done. And I don't have a face-to-face visit to support it. So I'm just trying to figure out what medical record I'm going to use besides the registered dietitian.
You don't have any other so they're only seeing the registered dietitian. They're not seeing anybody else?
Right. It's like an end where they were on another plan, obviously, and then when they were on our plan, it's just the ending of the registered dietitian services per se, and I don't have any other like supporting documentation to support the malnutrition and any of the other notes.
Hang on a second. I'm pulling up that. Hang on a second. I'm pulling up that thing where I think you can go back and get that medical, Colleen. Hang on a second. Acceptable medical records. An MR must be linked to either claim on the risk adjustment. Okay. Any and all diagnosis from the medical record for the full benefit year may be abstracted, meaning coders may look beyond the data service of the linked claim. As long as a valid medical record is linked to at least one RA-eligible claim during the enrollee's enrollment period with the issuer, which you said that they don't have anything else.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a problem then.
Yeah.
Because what she's saying is they started, so like the doctors.
So you got to go back and get the note from January.
Yeah, but they can't, it has to be linked. It says during their, it says right here, has to be linked during the enrollees with the issuer. That was a different issuer.
But CMS made it seem like we're paying for them, so we have a right to that, to send that in as part of our claim. We have to support that.
But she wouldn't have a linked claim on the edge. The other MA plan, other issuer would. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's a good question, Colleen. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I just thought I'd propose it and see if anybody had any thoughts. Thanks for your suggestions, though. Karen and I will mull it over.
Hey, this is Jason. Can I switch gears and ask an MA question? So there was a HPMS memo dated June 20th of this year when it was talking about the subject is wrapped submission of data collection year diagnosis codes. And if some of you remember this, what they were talking about is if you had beneficiaries who were in a parent's organization that maybe had not reported diagnosis, that the new organization, I guess my first question is, I'm not really sure what they mean by parent organization, but does anyone recall this memo?
Yes.
So can anyone share any information on what exactly this is talking about?
I'm just trying to pull it up. What was the date on it again, Jason?
June 20th.
Jason, we interpreted that, this is paramount, we interpreted it as if in 2016 the enrollee was with another MA plan and they joined us in 2017, we can now go back and look at any medical records from 2016 and add any diags we would find.
That was how we interpreted it as well at Health New England.
Okay, so basically if you could get in contact with that other health plan or be able to access those records to be able to review and then be able to basically like a chart review, be able to add anything before the 2016 collection period closes.
Well, we're not really going to contact the old MA plan. We're internally trying to develop, we looked at our new enrollees, and then on marks, there's a way for you to, because it's all manual, and we're trying to find a more automated way to do it. We have the list of our new enrollees. Then we're going to try and find out which one of those, you know, was not Medicare, but new to Paramount. And then once we kind of narrow that down, then we're going to look to see which one of those came from another MA plan. And you can do that either on marks. And so we're trying to find out a less manual way to do it. But this way, we can go right to the provider and request the medical and don't have to include the other MA plan.
Okay. That makes sense.
We're doing a similar strategy, or we're going to be doing a similar strategy at Health New England, but I think we haven't gone quite as far as Deb. I think, you know, we have access to the EMR for all of our members that are our active members now, and if there are dates of service, you know, if their PCP was the same PCP this year as it is last year, we're just going to expand the scope of the search to potentially pull that PCP record.
So have you guys, so I think Jesse said that, have you guys started this process then?
No, not yet.
But you plan to before January sweeps?
If we can get through our current chase list, yes. This is sort of next up in line as another rock to look under before the deadline closes.
And Deb, what about you? Is Deb looking at the YouTube video?
No, I'm sorry. They were talking to me, so I didn't hear you. What was the question?
Have you started this process then that you mentioned?
Yeah, we have started. We're trying to finalize the list, and we're getting to the point where I'm very similar to what I'm at the point now, I think, where Jess is, because I'm tired of trying to find an easy way to do this. I just want to go out and get the reviews. So let's say we're just going to basically take the new member list, and we just heard last week on the RAPS and EDS phone call there's going to be special edits now for this. So we're like, we might as well just blanket search for them and submit the codes, and if they were fee-for-service last year or MA plan, they'll go through. But I think one reason we're not just going to willy-nilly go do that is because they did mention on that phone call they have not yet determined if there would be penalties, any kind of penalties for submitting a code that shouldn't have been submitted. So we're still trying to get the analytics around and make sure we're targeting the correct members.
All right, so this is Kristen. Quick check-in. We have 10 minutes left to us, which is time for probably one more topic of conversation, and then we can wrap up into some housekeeping. What I will say, just on that housekeeping, in case people start to sneak off a little early, is a good portion of our group is on the web portion in addition to the audio only. And if that's you, whenever you do log out of the meeting, you'll get a prompt for a one-question survey, the shortest survey known to man. And my ask for the folks who are on the visual is, you know, per the highlight I gave just a few moments ago about kind of our open approach to this meeting, if you have any ideas or suggestions, let me know. Any feedback, let me know. And we do have time for another question if somebody hasn't gotten a chance to ask a question of the group or has a topic that they want to just get some feedback on.
This is Michelle from Cox Health. I have a question as far as the IVA is concerned. I know this is kind of my hot topic right now because it's something that's hot on my plate. I've had a lot of the documents that I've submitted, the claims with the medical records, come back and like I look over the document and I'm like, how could they have not substantiated that claim? And I feel like I'm having to do a whole code review again on my medical records But I don't know if you guys are having the same things. And the other question I have, or just comment, is I found out, too, that our IVAs, you know, when they get their they're audited as well, I guess they get a penalty, a financial penalty, if they are not found to be up to par as well. So I guess, you know, they may be a little more stringent on giving out diagnosis codes and such, or HCCs, and maybe makes them a little more difficult to work with. I don't know, but has anybody else had the same thoughts or reactions, experiences, any of that?
This is Paramount. If we understand the question correctly, having to re-review the medical you submit because they, like, for instance, we get this all the time, they can't find the electronic signature, and we're like, it's right there. Is that the kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, or even, like, say an HCC for cerebral edema, and you look at the discharge summary, and it's right there, cerebral edema, and they've unsubstantiated that HCC. And then I send it back to them, and I'm like, it's right there. Cerebral edema, and they're treating with Decadron, you know. So it's just stuff like that. I'm just like, seriously, I'm having to redo all of these charts again, and I'm just like, I know it's my job, but at the same time, I'm like, come on, two coders have already looked at this. Why is it not being picked up? So a little bit of
frustration. I would probably have a quality conversation with your IVAs, somebody in there, because that's either they're not using coders that know what to look for, or they're not using coders at all. Because if you're finding a high number of those kind of instances, now for me, last year they haven't yet started to do our medical review. They're still in intake, but last year we had a large handful of ones where they said it didn't support it, and we're like, yeah, it did. It's right here. And we had to take it back to them. And then it got to the point where we just were like, since it didn't matter and there was not going to be any fines associated with it, we just were like, we're not going to argue with you. CMS changed the time frame, and we're like, we'll chalk it up to a learning lesson afterwards, which we did. We had, after the IVA submitted their findings for 2015 benefit year, we kind of had a lessons learned internally as well with our IVA to see what we could do better this year.
Have you had a better outcome? Of course, you said you're still in intake. I'm just curious if that's like a common thing. And, you know, you said, too, that you had a little bit of issue with, okay, if they don't have, like, the complete record, even though it's documented in the record, like for your inpatient records, that they're saying it's an incomplete record, it doesn't pass the intake portion. So we've had some of that as well, even though it might be documented right there in the discharge summary. So we've had some of that too.
Well, we're pushing back with that, because when they give us that intake report and they tell us that it's not complete, we'll go back and take a look at it and tell them, nope, it's fine, push it through for medical review, health status is what they call it. Push it through for health status, because the discharge summary will support the HCC, or put it through the HCC will support the HCC.
So, you know, it sounds as though, you know, even though they are the IVA, but they're still working for us. And, you know, ultimately, though, you know, this year it's not as big a deal, but next year it's going to be it. You know, whatever they say goes. It's not really going to matter what our opinion is.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. So we have about 3 minutes left to us, which I think to try to squeeze in one more discussion topic, we'll end up losing folks. So then let me just say that we'll be back again together for our end-of-month call, September 29th. I'm just quadruple-checking that that's actually scheduled because Lord knows I make mistakes all the time. It is. Oh, thank goodness. I'm not lying to anybody. Okay, so September 29th, it's already on the calendar. So if you haven't already registered to get the call in, we do encourage you to do that. I see a nice healthy group is already signed up. And again, you can see that group, so that way you have a sense of who's on the line. And then when you do log off today, again, great opportunity to provide any suggestions or feedback. If you feel like you have ideas to make the call even better, that's fantastic, and we want it. And then the only other resource that I'll call out for folks is we do have, again, our risk adjustments and our coding work group area on the website, which is where we curate all of the materials and tools and discussions that happen with this group within the virtual environment. And we encourage you to always consider picking up the conversation via the discussion forums in between these monthly calls. And that's a great way that we can fill discussion topics as well. So with that, I hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. For anyone over in the lower southern region of the country, I hope you stay dry, stay safe, and have lots of batteries and water available to you. And we'll talk to everyone again soon. Thanks so much for your time, everybody.
Thank you, Kristen.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you.